Marcus Kim, Judiciary Court of Order. Today is April 23rd. It's 8 p.m. Today we have to be out of this room by 3 o'clock. There's another committee following us in here today. So the first item on the agenda today I'm going to call out of order is House Bill 2477.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, it's good to be back for you, and you have before you House Bill 2477 with the Dash 5 amendments. There was a work group put together, a lot of hours by my assistant here, the pack mule carrying the load, Representative Stigler. I really appreciate
pack mule.
Whoa.
She used to support me in this, but I'm not sure.
At least he didn't call me a donkey.
Anyway, Representative Stigler would be happy to answer any questions about the Dash 5 amendments as I put the full burden on her back. I asked Andrea when I came in if there was a group hug, and she said she came to the party with me but refuses to dance, and so I'm sure she'll have some I'm sure she'll have some comments about the Dash 5s. But, Judy?
Thank you, Representative. And I want to say, first of all, that I appreciated the work that everybody and comments that everybody's put into this. And this has been through several iterations. As you can see, we're up to Dash 5s. And let me just quickly try to walk through and explain to you what the Dash 5s do. First of all, if you will...
Representative, you need to identify
yourself. Oh, I'm sorry. Identify myself. You're also, I'm the pack mule. No. For the record, I'm Judy Stigler, representative from House District 54. And no comment, Representative Krieger. With respect to the Dash 5 amendments, Mr. Chair and committee members, the focal point has been with respect to, well, the biggest concerns had to do with the elevation to a Class C felony, issues regarding particularly minors, the sex offender registration, and the issue regarding the baby in the bathtub kind of scenarios for pictures. So I'm going to try and take those one at a time. And first of all, with respect to the elevation to a Class C felony, what the Dash 5 amendments do is remove juveniles from the initial. So they basically get a free pass. The first time that anybody under the age of 18 is adjudicated on these types of charges, it would be a misdemeanor. It wouldn't be elevated to a felony until the second commission. With respect to the baby in the bathtub types of scenarios, I went had in-depth discussions with legislative counsel on this, Josh Nasby, and what we ultimately decided that it was going to be very difficult to try to put a box around this. So what we ended up doing was probably the only thing under the circumstances we could do, which is sort of the laundry list of people that this would be that would be excluded for taking these kind of pictures. And you'll see the long list in that it's been expanded from mother and father, sibling, grandparent, to father, mother, sibling, grandparent, aunt, uncle, first cousin by blood, adoption, or marriage. Additionally, we also tried to address the issue, and notice that there is an and there. One of the things I think folks were worried about was people, you know, these pictures need to be taken with a sexual, for the purpose of arousing or gratifying a sexual desire. So be sure and read that in the conjunctive. It's not an or. These pictures are taken by one of these people and they're done for one of these types of purposes. Moving on, we get into the aspects of this that require sex offender registration. And you'll note that what it does is totally delete reference to, if you go to the very beginning of the bill, the reference to ORS 163.701, little a, big A and B, that part is excluded. So 1A, little a, is excluded as a basis for sex offender registration. And the concern there in talking with legislative counsel was that without a sexual component to the actual act being alleged, that it could cause some constitutional problems. So that was removed. The other aspect that we changed with respect to sex offender registration is that, first of all, it only applies to those 18 years of age and older. So any act by a juvenile is never subject to a sex offender registration, even if it's done under the conditions that we have prescribed. So juveniles are out of that altogether. And secondly, it's on after the second adult conviction that somebody would be subject to sex offender registration for such an act. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wissman.
Representative Stigler, did you consider guardians? You know, you got that long list of people.
I know. And there probably are other people that could be added in. The one thing that I guess I would add to this is that you could probably have an innumerable list. When you get into the concerns of folks were that the baby in the bathtub kind of situation, so we tried to focus in on the people that were most logical and probably the people that were most of us would say, yeah, that's fine for them to be taking those pictures. But again, I would underscore here that the intent is that any of these kinds of pictures, that they be done for sexual gratification. I mean, that's the part that... So if you're taking the innocent pictures... So I think the example was floated during the last time this bill came up about, well, what if the kids are running along the beach? That's not going to come under these statutes to begin with. They don't qualify under either of the definitions of invasion of privacy. Number one, nobody has an expectation of privacy while they're prancing around on the beach, in a public beach. And secondly, unless there's some indication that it's being done for, you know, not great purposes, then I don't think you have to worry about that. So those are not the kind of situations that are going to be wrapped into this.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Andrea Meyer, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I do appreciate the efforts that have been made by many of you to work out a compromise with this bill. And I had hoped, in light of the court case, that there was a way to do that by changing the statutes in accordance with the issues raised by the court case. But unfortunately, we were not able to come to agreement. And I just want to briefly identify the concerns we have. I think there's probably more than, but let's just start with there's kind of two kinds of perpetrators who do this. There's the kind I think we've heard about who take the time and the effort to set up the cameras in the bathroom or the tanning place and others who... and then there are the kinds who can be swept up in this, the younger people who with the cell phone can do things on a spur of the moment in situations in high school or in dorms, in college, that don't take a lot of pre-planning or thinking about, and all of a sudden you're subject to a very serious crime. We do appreciate removing the sex offender possibility for someone under 18. However, I'm still very concerned about the 18, 19, 20, and 21-year-olds, or even 22-year-olds, the population in the dorms, the college students who on a Friday night running around with a cell phone and pull the shower curtain on a friend and take a photo quickly, and they have already under current law committed a Class A misdemeanor, but they would be subject to C felony and sex offender registration depending on how the counts are brought and the charges. So we are concerned about the language regarding multiple convictions in that someone could plead guilty. Someone could take a number of different photos of friends in a 2 or 3 day period brought before the criminal justice system for the first time, plead guilty to the first one or a number of charges. The judge sentences the first one to an A misdemeanor. Second one, boom, you're at a C felony and potentially at sex offender registration for the older person and at a C felony for the younger person without sex offender registration versus trying to approach it where distinguishing between the first time they enter the criminal justice system, regardless of all the various charges, versus, and they've
pled, they've been sentenced, and they now know don't do this, and another time that they enter the criminal justice system. So that might be fixed, but again, we're very worried about the 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. Know that you don't do the criminal code 21 and under, so that wasn't a fix, and still concerned about the multiple convictions. In addition, the other area that ACLU has concerns about would be on page one and the redefinition of nudity. We are proposing in this bill to remove the post-pubescent words around genitals. We support that. That was the case. That was the court case. The statute was interpreted that genitals and nudity was only after a person started puberty. And therefore, a very young girl was not subject to the protections of this law. And we agree that genitals should not be restricted by post-pubescent. However, we respectfully disagree with having that language around the female breast. What this change does is sexualize, from our perspective, a infant, a 1 or 2 year old girl, differently than an infant or 1 or 2 year old boy, because we are now talking about a chest of a child, a very young child, before puberty. I understand that there are people out there who find sexual gratification on a lot of different things. And it might be a young girl's chest. It also might be a young boy's chest. And I suspect any catalog for clothing often exposes both. Could be other things. We just have an objection to putting an Oregon statute sort of sexualizing this part of a very young girl's anatomy differently than a young boy's. And so respectfully cannot support the legislation and hope that we can... I suspect the bill will move forward, but I do want to raise our concerns. I appreciate the work, and we will continue to work on our issues on the other side, I suspect. But
okay. Thank you very much.
You.
Any questions? Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
I move the dash fives in the House Bill 2477.
Representative Wisnett moves the dash fives in House Bill 2477. Is there any objection? Representative Shields?
Some discussion. Actually, Mr. Chair, I came in late. I apologize. Does this still have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means?
It does.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
I move House Bill 2477 as amended. To the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2477 as amended to the Ways and Means with a due pass. Discussion.
Question perhaps, Mr. Chair, if Representative Stigler or Representative Huffman would be so inclined. I'm wondering, I absolutely support the intent of this bill. Is this bill, the Dash 5, is this a final product, or do you think there might be further refinements, such as, for example, Representative Wisnett's point regarding guardians on the other side?
Representative Barton, I there may well be some refinement of it, and I would not, I think both Representative Huffman, and let him speak for himself, and I would be open to some kinds of those refinements. I, you know,
thank you.
Happy to have those discussions somewhere along the way.
Okay. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. We'd like to carry that.
That's going to Ways and Means.
Oh, Ways and Means, right. Okay. Yeah. I have an announcement on House Bill 3399. We just got the amendment. We're not prepared to work it today. So we won't be able to work today. I'm going to carry that over until the 27th. Put it back on the calendar.
To the
27th. Okay, so we're ready to go along. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3474.
H.R. 3474 was first heard, on April 20th. It increases the processing fee charged to an employee by an employer for garnishing an employee's wages. We now have the financial paperwork It's essentially, you have a state in front of you. It's essentially an indeterminate fiscal that really doesn't say all that much. Sorry, I don't know what else to say about it.
The employee bids, I mean...
It does not have any subsequent referral. It's ready to be worked today.
Okay, thank you. And nobody's...
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3474 to the House with a due pass.
Representative Stigler moves House Bill 3474 to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barger?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Representative Stigler, carry that for us, please. Open a work session on House Bill 2463.
Sorry for the delay. House Bill 2463, we first heard back on February 24th. We should have dash two amendments before each of the committee members. The 2463 allows a person with a concealed permit weapon issued by another state to carry a weapon in Oregon. As amended, this with the dash two amendments, this would provide that a person would receive reciprocity in Oregon if the other state granted reciprocity to Oregonian CHL holders, or if they had, I think it's an or, they had standards that were equal to equal to the standards that Oregon imposes when they review CHL holders. This does have a fiscal impact statement, and the committee members all have that in front of them. I believe it estimates approximately $143,000 for this biennium, and about the same for the next biennium.
Mr. Chair, there is another one that doesn't have that, I believe. Fiscal?
I do not
have that. Let's see if I can find it here. Is this the same one that you've got?
Dash two, yeah.
Dash twos.
Well, and the dash twos took out or, so it was and, so people from out of state wouldn't have more rights than an Oregonian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing went through that day. So we need to have a conversation.
That's what we wanted. No, we wanted it. Yeah. Okay. Look. Okay. Well, bring it over here. Desk two still say
or,
and we need that to be an and. So we'll have to carry this bill over to get that corrected. That won't affect any fiscal. And we'll check on that. Okay, so close the work session on House Bill 2463.
Carry it to
428.
This kind
of
fiscal.
Wayne,
thank
you.
Yeah. Should have done the same thing as Steve Bill's call.
Over the work session on House Bill 3348.
House Bill 3348, originally heard on April 17th, authorized the special agents employed by the governor to apply for search warrants and sign a judge's name on a duplicate original warrant, declares an emergency. There are no amendments to this bill. We have a fiscal impact statement is issued. It essentially says it's indeterminate.
Okay. Want to come on up? Thank you. Just identify yourself for the record.
33.
For the record, my name is Barry Bashu. I'm the president of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, here today representing myself and the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association to voice our opposition to House Bill 3348. I apologize for our late entrance into this. I also am thankful for your indulgence. I was able to speak to many of you this morning. I'm unable, and I apologize to those of you that I wasn't able to talk to directly. Had good conversation. I think the primary concern we have goes back to a philosophical and, I believe, outdated opportunity dating back to the Pinkertons to allow the governor to provide for special agents. This bill, I believe, expands the authority of those special agents even further than was perhaps originally intended in the original Pinkerton-style bills. I am very uncomfortable with what appears to be an opportunity here to have private citizens, admittedly acting on behest of the governor, under no particular police authority, under no particular oversight other than the board of directors of a nonprofit organization, to be allowed to write warrants. Now, while I appreciate the fact that these warrants will still be served by police officers, I believe it's one more step in giving even more authority to what could reasonably be determined as a private police force. So it's a philosophical opposition. It's also a policy. I think it's a poor place, and perhaps this committee or members of this committee would like to address in the future whether or not the governor should have the authority to apply to private citizens acting as policemen under the authority only of a nonprofit board. So I'm here to oppose this bill and ask your indulgence in voting against it and not moving it out of this committee. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Barry, earlier we had some discussion. I was just curious, because this bill has support from the chiefs as well as the sheriffs.
And again, we have tried to get a hold of their lobbyists. This is something that came to us, and it's our fault, I guess. When we look at the relating clauses, we saw search warrants, and of course didn't tie it to the fact that this was a bill regarding private agents. So I apologize for that. I have spoken to policemen, not the associations. I've spoken to policemen. Some don't think it's a bad thing. Some think it's horrific. I guess I would dump this in your lap and say whether or not, again, it's good public policy to have private action by private citizens. And I am not denigrating those people. Apparently, this system has worked well. There hasn't been any particularly egregious abuse of it. But I think it's one more step in creating yet more authority to private citizens, which I don't think is sound public policy.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I enjoyed our discussion this morning. And I 2 points, one of which you would agree with. I think it was just a slight misspeak in the testimony. But this bill in no way authorizes special agents to write warrants so much as apply for warrants. And it's just slight, but it's a critical distinction because if it did that, I could certainly never support it. Second of all, I appreciate the underlying concerns that he's bringing to us about essentially the delegation, this legislature delegating power to the governor, who essentially to commission special agents essentially at will. And that is a very significant power. And it is one that, if there is any evidence, that power has been in place for approximately a century. This bill, in no way, in my opinion, affects that power. If there is any evidence that that power is being abused or that the governor is using that power to appoint untrained agents, I would love for that. I'll be here, and I would be the first to try and move to constrain that power. If this has been a problem. In the last century, fortunately, it has not. And in my discussions and follow-ups with the governor's staff and minimum training requirements that are already in place for the governor to grant these special agents, I'm optimistic that this bill is a good bill.
Okay, thank you. Any further? Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm sorry you weren't here earlier to hear all the testimony and the
Understood.
Support of it, and maybe it would be some of your concerns, because I know last session we had a bill that didn't pass because there was too many concerns. I think they ironed out a lot of those this time. So, thank you very much.
Representative Wisnant. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I voted for the bill last session, and I plan to vote on this bill. And I'm going to vote no in committee and reserve the right to vote yes. And this will give a chance for the Senate to look and to give the Farm Bureau time to catch up if they really got some concerns in the Senate. So I'll be a no in the committee, but I reserve the right to vote yes because I promised my vote on the floor.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3348 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Stigler moves House Bill 3348 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barnes?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
No.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Smith, would you carry that for us? Sir?
Oh, I was hoping to say something that was slightly different than that. I will do whatever the chair needs me to do, but I was hoping to speak on the record.
Go ahead and speak on the record.
It's time for that. I do hope. Just want to say to the record, I do hope that the Senate takes a look at the Farm Bureau's concerns and comes up with something. To the extent they look at the record, there's not just one person on this committee who hopes that they take a look at that. There are more than one.
Okay, thank you. Sure. Okay, close the. Open a work session on House Bill 2682. And we'll carry that over to April 24th. Close the work session. Yeah. Open a work session on House Bill 3341. Carry it over to April 28th.
Okay.
The next one.
Open a work session on House Bill 2790.
House Bill 2790 was first heard on March 30th. You now have -4 amendments in front of the committee members. This bill has to do with changing the composition of the Board of Public Safety Standards and Training and or to the subcommittees. And I believe you have Brian DeLashmet here to speak on the -4s today that were the product of a work group, is my understanding.
2790. Committee, I know you're pressed for time. For the record, Brian DeLashmet, representing the Oregon Council Police Associations, the Oregon State Police Officers Association, the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees, and FOPO. This has been a six-year journey. I want to thank the chair and also Representative Garrett and his staff, Tim, who convened a work group. I believe we have a compromise that everybody can live with. At the table was DPSST staff, along with the chiefs and the sheriffs, and I don't know how extensive you want me to go through these amendments, but in essence, we've taken the bill, deleted everything, and started over. Because it was getting too complicated on who was added and who was subtracted, and so forth. So the composition, in essence, doesn't change with two exceptions. One, there's been the addition of a parole and probation officer, who is certified, obviously, by DPSST, but they've never had representation on DPSST. We think that's valuable. On page 2, line 17, there's the movement of the representative from the Oregon State Forestry Department, Fire Protection Agencies, been moved to the policy subcommittee rather than being a participant on the full board. And then there's the addition on page 4 of the amendment, line 25, of two additional non-management corrections officers. Currently, the Corrections Policy Subcommittee does not have anybody from local corrections on it at all. It's DOC corrections. I think there was consensus that there needed to be some input, obviously, from local corrections, although this specific language does not specify that it needs to be local corrections. I think that's the understanding that everybody kind of came away from that meeting with. And then as I mentioned, on page 5, line 9, we had moved the person from a Forest Protection Agency, State Forestry Department, to the Policy Subcommittee instead of being on the full board. And then on line 22, we added two additional line or non-management police officers to the Policy Subcommittee to give a little bit more input on what's going on in the street. Beyond that, You all recall my little, I'm good at charts, my little chart. And what my my goal was to shorten the process in this whole system and also give the officers what we felt was a fairer shake as far as due process. We believe these amendments, as outlined on page 8, lines 24, and then through page 9, in fact, do that. Clarification, I know that DPSST on our original bill was concerned that we were engaging in a review of not just discretionary disqualifiers, but also the mandatory disqualifiers. So that's made very clear in lines 24 through 26. We believe lines 27 that continue on to the next page through line 2 actually shorten the process. Before, one of our concerns was that the policy subcommittee holds what we call a hearing, they don't call a hearing, and then you go through that whole process again with the full board. This shortens that process, so the policy subcommittee would hold that process, that review of the staff notes, and then if the person indicated that they wanted it go to a full hearing in front of an ALJ, they could do that. And in that time, while that clock was ticking, then the board would be notified of the decision of the policy subcommittee. If they objected or wanted to change that recommendation, they would have that opportunity while the clock was ticking, setting up the ALJ process. And so that will condense that particular piece. And the final piece that I'll talk about is the final sections, lines 6 through 13. As I understand that, this deals with the board itself amending, or the staff amending, the final order of the ALJ, sets up a process for that. We think that's important that it's spelled out, that once the ALJ has had the hearing, everybody's got their chance, he or she has issued an order that the board, in fact, will have an opportunity, but it sets out the process for them to amend that order. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions. There is one additional thing that I want to just kind of put on the record. One of the other concerns we had was the timeliness of information and notice to the officer, and we've got agreement from DPSST that they will formalize a 30-day period for the officers to provide information about the upcoming hearing. We didn't believe we needed to have that in statute. They've agreed that they'll formalize that process, which they've already moved to. And with that, if there's any technical questions, Marilyn's here. She worked on not only the language, but obviously the agreement. And I'll be quiet. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions?
For the record, Marilyn Lawrence, I'm here to answer any questions. I think Brian's reviewed, and this was a consensus process.
Okay, thank you. Representative.
Just one little question, Mr. Chair. Brian, how many of these do we have in an average year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, Marilyn could probably answer that better than I could.
Mr. Chair and Representative Krieger, last year, DPSST opened and closed about 475 cases. Of those, about 75 moved to denial or revocation. That's a typical year. I think the last year was 60 something. The year before that was 70 something of the cases that are reviewed.
Mr. Chair, that number is much, much larger than what I would have anticipated. I'm kind of surprised. That's interesting.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I think the follow-up question would have been, if the department moved for revocation, how many of those actually went to the hearings process and moved through the process? And I would suspect that number was smaller.
Again, Mr. Chair and Representative Krieger, those who have denial and revocation pending based on discretionary matters who actually request hearings are about, I'd say, 15 to 25 of those in a year.
Okay, thank you. Further questions? The larger number would show up, as you recall, in the two police departments I worked for. I know that there would be cases that got no publicity because somebody would resign.
Yes.
And then DPST might pull their ticket, and so you don't read about it in the paper like you would do the contested case.
Mr. Chair, if I may just again clarify, if any of you have, and I suspect you have, gotten emails from a particular constituency, for example, I know that the chair had a contact with his chief and concern about them not being on the board. That, in fact, has been changed. So you can reply that the board exists the way it does now, as I explained, with the two changes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash fours into House Bill 2790.
Representative Wisnet moves the dash fours in House Bill 2790. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Wisnet,
I move House Bill 2790 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnet moves House Bill 2790 to the floor with a due pass as amended. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stiegler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnet?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Krieger, would you carry that for us, please?
That's fine.
Thank you. Open a public hearing on House Bill 30. House Bill 2447.
We're not going to do 3220.
We're holding off for a second.
Another line.
Stand at these for just a moment. And open a work session on House Bill 3220.
3220?
I don't think we have it here.
Well, we did.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3220 comes to you from the Oregon Law Commission. It's similar to a bill last session. I do not believe we have the fiscal impact statement on the bill. It would establishes the standards and procedure for determining if use in a delinquency matter is unfit to proceed as a result of mental disease or defect, and consequently is unable to stand the nature of the proceedings and assist in his defense, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Unfortunately, we do not have the fiscal impact statement yet.
So we can't move it today.
We will suspend the rules and move it.
It does go to Ways and Means Committee. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's a carbon copy of a bill from last session. So if you want, I can call down to Ways and Means and see if I can get them to at least get the one from last session.
Yeah.
send it down?
Can we send it down without a recommendation? Sure. Send it down without a recommendation.
Yeah. You don't have to have the fiscal statement to send it to Ways and Means, do you?
Sure, members of the committee, I'm just thinking technically.
We shield, I thought we were supposed to have fiscal impacts.
We suspend the rules and have it sent down. I'm going to object. We did about five of them in one committee this morning.
3220. Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnant.
I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3220 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review.
Representative Wisnant moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3220 without the fiscal impact statement being available
for review.
The motion is undebatable. Those of the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 3220 with the fiscal impact statement not being available for review will say aye. Those opposed, no.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
No. Motion carries. Rules have been suspended.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that we send House Bill 3220 to Ways and Means.
Representative Wisnant moves House Bill 3220 to the Ways and Means Committee.
With or without recommendation?
Just want to send it down.
Send it down.
Okay.
Without recommendation?
Yes, without recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barnard?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Yes.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Spiegler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
3222 Ways and Means. Need any further?
I'm sitting there.
Okay. Thank you.
You do it.
It does.
Open a work session on House Bill 2447.
House Bill 2447 was first heard back at the end of February. This was Representative Gelzer's bill. It created the crime of felony strangulation. You'll have your staff measure summaries in front of you. Felony strangulation would be a level 6 on the grid block, and it would only be elevated to a level 6 in certain circumstances. You have dash 1 amendments in front of you, and they don't address the language of the felony strangulation. What they do is add what would be the newly created crime of felony strangulation into the list of crimes for which the statute of limitation is extended. So that's what the dash 1s do. We also, what we would be doing is suspending the rules on this. There is a fiscal impact statement issued on the original bill. It's $470,918 for the next biennium, and then $1.1 million for the following biennium. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, so if the committee decides to move the bill, we would suspend the rules. Since we do not have a fiscal on the dash 1, we would suspend the bill to Ways and Means.
Okay. With the motion to adopt the dash 1?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash 1 with the House Bill 2447.
Representative Wisnant moves the dash 1s in House Bill 2447. Is there any objection?
Discussion.
Sorry,
wait. I don't seem to have the dash 1s in front of me.
Here.
Council, refresh my recollection. What do the dash 1s do?
They simply add there are a category of charges that extend the statute of limitations. There's murder, criminal mistreatment, rape, sodomy, et cetera, and it would add this newly created crime of felony strangulation into these class of crimes for which the statute of limitations is extended.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair, if I may? A series of questions, perhaps, of counsel.
Yes, please.
So under what circumstances are they extended, i.e., is this has a longer statute, or are they the statute of limitations is only extended if... Can you explain to me, please?
Under 131.125, there are a list of crimes. So basically, you have the felony. A felony is extended to, and I believe it's 6 years if the victim was under the age of 12 in any case before the victim attains 30 years of age or within 12 years after the offense was reported.
That's what I got
from... I'm sorry, I mean the victim's under 18. So in that circumstance, then there's a list of crimes that in that circumstance, then the statute is extended. And this would add felony strangulation, which... up till now doesn't exist into that list. And then it does the same thing for the misdemeanor of strangulation. It adds it into the extension of the statute of limitations, and I think it's 4 years, yes.
And if the dash ones were not adopted, what would the statute of limitations be?
Off the top of my head, I think it's 2 years, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further discussion about the dash ones? Any objection to dash ones? Hearing none, so ordered.
This is going to be first.
Which one?
2447.
Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2447 without the fiscal impact statement on the dash one being available for review.
Representative Wisnett moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2447 without the fiscal impact statement being available for review. The motion is undebatable. Those who are of the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of voting on House Bill 2447
as amended
without the fiscal impact statement being available for review will say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2447 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2447 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there any further discussion?
Does that mean moved with a due pass recommendation ultimately? No.
We're just going to send it down. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Yes.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative
Shields? Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stiegler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
15 to 20.
Aye. I'm sorry.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. And we'll send it. Is there any objection to sending it down with a due pass recommendation?
No.
Okay, we'll go with a due pass. Thank you. Open a work session on House Bill 2874.
2874 we first heard on March 30th and again on April 6th. This would allow victims to assert the right to a speedy trial. You adopted the dash twos on the 6th of April. We have the paperwork back. April 16th. We have the financial paperwork back. There is a minimal expenditure impact with no statement issued from fiscal, no revenue impact.
Okay, thank you.
Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
I move House Bill 2874 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett.
As amended.
Representative moves House Bill 2874 as amended to the floor of the due pass. Discussion.
Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Shields.
I've been grappling with this bill. If I recall the testimony, the proponents came with the Hauser family to talk about, you know, the awful tragedy that their family befell and the very, very long time that they've had in pursuing the death penalty. And I think their point was that should be shorter. So my assumption then is that case did not apply, or this bill would not apply to that case. If that's true, that and I think what the proponents were saying that the constitutional rights of a defendant would trump this bill. So I'm not sure. I'm conflicted with this bill. Either does nothing and it makes me wonder why we're passing it, or it does something. And if it does something, then I don't see how you end up without a fiscal impact to the judicial branch, particularly. So while I do appreciate that LFO said there'll be a minimal fiscal impact. I just can't see how they could be correct in this case, and on that basis, I'll be voting no.
Okay, thank you,
Mr. Chair. We have moved the dash, we previously moved the dash one, but not the dash two, correct?
I thought we... No, it's a dash one. The only? Right, I have, they were adopted on the 16th, but maybe we didn't. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Take a motion for the dash two.
The council, the committee is saying that they did not adopt the dash two, so we would need to have a motion to adopt the dash two.
To replace the one.
That's what I had said over for this one.
I think I read in the record dash two.
I don't think we had the dash twos last time.
Mr. Chair, to confirm my motion, it's I move that the dash twos in the House Bill 2874.
Dash twos in House Bill
2874.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2874 is amended to the floor of a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnant moves House Bill 2874 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Hearing none. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton? Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion passes and I'll carry the bill. Open a work session on House Bill 2991. Representative Olson.
Oh, House Bill 2991. First heard back in March. You have three sets of amendments in front of you at this point. Dash ones, dash twos, and dash threes from Representative Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll just kind of share with you the dash threes, and that was brought more to my attention, and maybe if also David Yandell, Director of LEDS, might be able to speak a little bit with this as well. But, well, I'll just go up front. And
okay,
share with
thank you.
You.
Thank you. He's what it's asking for. Isn't that Volstead? If you want to come up. Matt Bolstead wanted to come up as well.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative out of the Albany area in House District 15. And I want to bring to your attention the Dash 3 amendments right now. The whole idea of where we're going with this House Bill 2991, I like the idea. And I'm supportive of it. But it was brought to my attention through Tammy Woods, who's a captain, and you've seen her before here from the Linn County Sheriff's Office. She is very well versed in the civil aspect for this area with the sheriff's dealing with CHL's concealed handgun license. And I just want to read a letter that she sent to me on the 15th of this month after we'd had our first discussion of House Bill 2991. It says, I see you're having a work session on this bill soon, and then there are some holes in the statutes that need to be corrected. Under federal law, a person with a domestic violence misdemeanor conviction is barred from purchasing or possessing a firearm or ammunition. The Oregon CHL statutes allow a person with a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence to have an Oregon CHL if the misdemeanor is over 4 years old. Therefore, a person can use an Oregon CHL to circumvent federal disability. Additionally, a person can be an unlawful user of or addicted to controlled substances and qualify for an Oregon CHL so long as they have not had a conviction or participated in a court-supervised drug diversion program. However, under federal law, someone who is an unlawful user or addicted to controlled substances is barred from purchasing or possessing firearms or ammunition. Under federal law, a conviction is not needed to show a person is an unlawful user of or addicted to controlled substances. The federal definition is simply that the unlawful use occurred recently enough to indicate that the individual is actively engaged in such conduct. Again, a person can use their CHL to circumvent the federal disability. This bill may very well subject a sheriff to violate federal law. It prohibits a person, and she goes on to describe a United States statute, but prohibits a person from making a false or misleading written statement likely to deceive a firearms dealer with respect to the lawfulness of the sale of a firearm. I submit a sheriff who issues a CHL knowing the person cannot legally possess a firearm is in violation of the federal code. If a sheriff refuses to issue the license, a person can appeal to the circuit court. And the court's decision must be based on whether the person meets the criteria for issuance under Oregon statutes. The court is not allowed to contemplate whether the person can legally possess a firearm. Bottom line is, I mean, I personally am very supportive of a member, someone who owns CHL to be able to go in and purchase a firearm and not have to wait. And the problem, though, with the way we're structured right now with the CHL, it appears that there's a problem that the sheriffs could very easily be in violation of federal law regarding that. So, and this was, you know, besides Captain Woods bringing this to my attention, David Yandell, the director of Leds, as well, pointed out to me, and we had discussion then with a member from the Department of Justice last week and also legislative counsel. So that's what you have right now in front of you as a result of that conversation in dash threes.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Yandell. I'm the director of the Law Enforcement Information Division for the Oregon State Police. As we understand House Bill 2991, the intent, as the representative stated, would be to allow a CHL holder to purchase a weapon without having to go through the required NICS check that purchasers are currently required to go through. One of the issues that the gentleman to my left pointed out in the last time this bill was worked is that any effort to allow a CHL holder to purchase a firearm is going to have to meet ATF requirements in order to be considered. So with that perspective in mind and the concerns expressed by Captain Wood, when we met last Friday with legislative counsel, our intent was to try to craft language that would bring the sheriff's requirements for conducting a background check for a CHL holder in line with the purchasing requirements that are already existing under federal law and consistent with the Oregon program. I'd like to point out that we've discovered, unfortunately, given the short turnaround time with the amendment, there are two of the federal prohibitors which are missing in this current amendment, specifically those that are under indictment and those that are fugitive from justice. So there's some additional tweaking that we would have to do to satisfy what we understand is our primary charge. But our intent would be to streamline the process, make it consistent with the federal law. At some stage here in the process, we would want to run our proposal by ATF to get their formal blessing before moving it too much further.
Okay. Chair Barker, members of the committee, Matt Bolstad with PacWest here on behalf of the Oregon Gun Owners Association, and everything that was just said is exactly what we were trying to do with the Dash 1 amendments, which obviously did not go far enough. The Dash 1 amendments, the goal of those was to bring Oregon CHL in line as something that ATF would recognize as a valid alternative to the NICS check at the time of purchasing a firearm. And obviously we missed quite a few of the federal standards, and if the Dash 3s bring those into line, then we are definitely in support of that. And I appreciate the work that was done to that end.
Andy, on page 8 of the amendments, which is there's an increase in fees. Where is that? Was that someplace else prior in the bill? I didn't see it in the other part of the bill. So the amendments have added something either to the bill or to another section.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I can't respond to that. But there was the tail end that I'd left during our discussion, so I'm not privy in that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, to your question, the fees that are outlined here are in addition to the $15 fee, which is already set in statute. The $50 to the sheriff, the $15 to the sheriff for duplicate fee, those are already set in statute. But in order to satisfy the current schedule for fees that the Department of State Police has for conducting these checks, the 19 and a quarter is the fee that currently we're assessed for doing a nationwide fingerprint-based check. The $28 is the fee that we currently charge users for doing an Oregon fingerprint-based background check, and the $10 fee is what's currently set as a cap in statute for conducting a NICS check. So these would be consistent charges for recovering the cost of conducting the required checks. I might also add, if I may, that a bit of a concern that I'd like to at least express to you is that given the short turnaround on this set of amendments, the Sheriff's Association and the sheriffs as a body have not really been afforded an opportunity to give us their feedback, and we certainly, in the spirit of partnership, would like to have the opportunity to have them look at this and respond accordingly.
Representative Krieger.
Specifically, then, to page 8, line 7, this bill changes an existing fee, 15 to 28.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, that is correct.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, and that was, the fee was actually our primary concern with the amendments, that this is overall $42.25 increase on a permit that was $80 to begin with. It's a 50% increase. And when I did the calculations before from the initial fiscal impact statement, it came to about an increase of $20 for the CHL would have offset the loss in the next biennium. And we chose half of that to be the increase in the Dash 1 amendment, so $10. So there would have still been a loss to Oregon State Police. But if these fees are what is necessary for this bill to work, and in the end I assume perhaps it would save CHL owners money in the long term if there was not a $10 fee every time a firearm was purchased, then we would be in support of it if this is what's necessary. If not, we'd like to see this fee come down, because that is quite of an increase from the initial $80 that it costs now.
Okay. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, under the Dash 3 amendments, and I want to make sure I'm keeping this straight, so forgive, correct me where I'm wrong. Under the Dash 3 amendments, so I thought this, to the extent this bill sounds interesting, it sounds particularly interesting if it reduces the hassle on gun owners and on merchants without reducing any protections that are otherwise available to other concerns, law enforcement, et cetera. Under the Dash 3 amendments, is it your impression that we are getting the same amount of protections as if this bill didn't pass at all?
Well, Mr. Representative Smith, if the bill doesn't pass, it just doesn't give a CHL holder the opportunity to be able to go in and purchase a weapon.
Right, they don't get the hassle advantage. I get that.
And I think that's, that's kind of nice to have, that
right.
ability. But, with where we're at right now, as what David Yanandell had explained, I didn't realize it was going to be that expensive for the added pieces on the federal government side
right.
to get us into compliance
right.
for the sheriffs and everything. That's, I guess we're at a point now where you weigh which way you want to go.
And let me by saying if the bill didn't pass, I think I made it confusing. By this, I mean, I think that the intent of the Dash 3 amendments is to make sure that, according to law enforcement, we are as there are as many protections in place with the Dash 3 amendments bill passed as we have under current law. but that if we, that the law enforcement concern is if we pass the bill without the dash three amendments, with dash ones or something else, that we wouldn't have that same level of protection. And I'm sort of dumbing down the thing for, so that I can get it, you know, is that roughly an accurate understanding? The dash three gives us essentially the current level of protections, and anything other than that sacrifices the current level of protections? Is that roughly right?
Chair Barker, Representative Smith, that's essentially correct. I mean, that is clearly our goal, is to tighten it up to be at least as consistent with what an individual would have to do today if they were attempting to purchase a firearm. The dealer would still be required to run a LEDS check when the CHL holder would come in to purchase a firearm. The purpose of that would be to ensure that they have an active and current CHL. One of our concerns in our discussion was what Captain Wood shared with us, that in many instances when the sheriff cancels a CHL permit and goes to collect the permit, in many instances, they've lost the permit or say it's no longer available. So our concern would be that we now put a dealer into a precarious situation of not being certain whether that individual has an active permit. So that's covered in the dash three. There is a requirement that a LEDS check be run. The concern to your question may well be making sure that we've tightened it up sufficiently during the period that that CHL permit is in force, that any activity that might be a cause of concern to the sheriff or to public safety were notified of in an expedient manner.
Cool. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And just for what it's worth, I'm trying to process it and don't know that I have it exactly right. But my hope would be that we would be very careful before we would reduce the level of protections that law enforcement says is needed, and as we're doing that, to the extent we can make it easier on gun owners, that's good. So, you know, where that leads us, I'm not exactly sure, but.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westnap.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I would recommend that I'd like to have NRA also go on the record. I understand they're opposed to this, but I also think as a courtesy we should have Representative Witt come in, because we've changed this now that I'm not sure he was trying to look after people and wanted to increase their fees 50%, so it might be worthwhile to have a sponsor at least talk to these people or talk, but we may...
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Wisner, I have had discussion with Representative Witt regarding it, and before I even started moving toward this, I approached him and discussed this whole concern and issue that had been brought up, and he just said, go do what you can do to get it corrected then.
But clarification, but Mr. Chair, thank you. But Representative Olson, I think you said you weren't sure about the fee increase. You didn't know it was going to be that much, did you?
I was not, yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Wisner, I was not aware that it was going to be, the fee increase was going to be of this substantial, $42.25. I mean, with us getting in compliance with what federal regulations are.
And as you're pulling around, Mr. Chair, for what it's worth, I admire the work Representative Olson is doing. I support the work he's trying to do. I'm prepared to vote in favor of the bill with the necessary amendments. Other than that, I'm very unsure if we're providing the current level of protections, and probably, you know, probably not.
I have some discussion about this in my committee. This has seemed to take some funny turns. We're late in our ability to move a bill out of this side of the building, and if we do move it out, we're going to be putting it on the slide that goes to the Senate with hopes that they could correct it. There's obviously shortcomings. There's prices we didn't expect. Sometimes at this point in the session, bills end up having to wait till another cycle. So what's the pleasure of the committee?
I move.
You don't need to make official motion. But yeah, come on up. I mean, we don't need to have...
get an input from NRA or don't?
Yeah, we could... And we'll get some input from that. Why don't we have the NRA come up and give us an opinion if you'd like to. Would you like to testify, Rod? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Just a minute. We'll let NRA in and we'll...
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Rod Harder, the Oregon consultant from the National Rifle Association. We're here to oppose these amendments. I just got my first look at them when I walked in this afternoon. When we testified previously, we supported the concept of the bill. I certainly want everything to be in line, but we are obviously opposed to a $42 increase in the fee. When it's expressed that this will be saving money for gun owners, I'm not sure that's true. When it comes to concealed handgun license holders, I am almost positive there's going to be a lot of objection when we put this out tonight as to the increase in fees. As far as the rest of the bill, I've not had a chance to go through it and really analyze it, and I would encourage the committee not to move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Martin, you
had it. I'll pass.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Yeah, it might be one of those cases, Mr. Chair. I personally, myself, I would like to see something happen with this bill for the CHL holders. But on the other hand, maybe it might be one of those that you address, next session.
It seems that the fees have surprised everybody. Representative
Mr. Chair, and that gets into the fiscal. And as in every committee I've been in, we've been talking about agencies that really don't want something. They jack it up, make it cost more, want fees to cover it. Or if they really want it, they minimize it. I've made that statement every committee over and over, and it's the worst I've ever seen in the 9 years I've been here. And it's so obvious. I talked to the Speaker, and I talked to Chip Perhune about it. It isn't appropriate because the decisions that you make have got to be based on factual information. We make mistakes, and a lot of times I don't think we're getting the facts on these fiscals.
Okay. What's the pleasure?
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify that if somebody's going to go, if this bill passes and somebody goes out to get their concealed permit, it's regardless of whether they're going to buy another gun or not, their fees are going to go up from $80 to get a concealed permit to $120. That's what this says.
Okay.
But I just want to clarify, is that if we pass this bill, is that what we're saying we're going to do? Plus we're going to give them an additional protection or an additional service with that they can go in and buy guns without additional background checks in the future. That's what we're looking at.
And so,
can anybody correct me on that?
No, I think that's exactly right.
I'm not sure. If I had a CHL and I go to buy another gun today, what is my fee to the dealer for the background check? Is it just the $10?
Mr. Chair, as I read the amendment to this, this fee would be charged to all people who have concealed handgun licenses, all people who would apply for them in the future. As I've discussed with a number of folks, many times people get CHLs for their own protection. They buy one gun in a lifetime, and that's the one that they get the CHL to hold. For myself, I don't have any more room for any more guns, so it wouldn't do me any good. But I think, by and large, many, many people are not going to go out and take advantage of this. They pay $10 to get a background check right now, and it would take four times of doing that, purchasing four guns to recoup that loss. We're not against some of the things that firm up the law, for Representative Smith's information. There are federal laws that need to be met. We're working on another bill that's on the ticket for today that will address that. But for right now, from a financial standpoint, I want to make that clear, it's the financial standpoint that we're arguing, the fiscal standpoint of this bill.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Representative Krieger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to belabor this thing forever, but if you go into a store now, you pick out a gun you want to do it, you fill out this thing, takes a minute to take a fingerprint, they get on the phone, they call them, 5 minutes, it's done. Why do I want to pay an extra, God knows how much more money? I'd just rather go with the process we got. This makes it worse.
Okay. So I think, Mr. Chair, this is probably a situation, I can go back and talk to Representative Witt, tell him where we're at with this bill, and that's probably something that we should work on at another date and time.
Okay, thank you. Oh. Close the hearing on House Bill 2991. Yeah. Open a work session House Bill 3343.
House Bill 2343 was first heard on April 15th. The original amendment deleted the bill and changed the penalties for employees of off-premises sales licensees. You now have dash two amendments for the committee, and I believe they were discussed last time. They have to do with the penalties faced by a person who sells alcohol unintentionally to a person under the age of 21. And Representative Smith.
Yeah, can we speak to that? You want me to go here?
Yep. Representative Barton can't batter you when you're sitting beside him, so you have to go.
You should never say that.
I shouldn't have said that, should I?
I was going to say, you just keep stepping in it.
Amateur error.
You missed that class at Harvard.
For the record, I apologize to interrupt the levity. Representative Jefferson Smith, representing District 47, speaking on behalf of House Bill 3343, the dash two amendments. This is the bill to address the issue that we heard from grocery clerks, et cetera, about sales of alcohol to minors, providing for some degree of safe harbor if they participate in a training. You might remember the line of questioning that I inflicted upon the committee around what happens about repeat offenders. The argument was there were no such thing, and my response on the record then was, well, if there are no such thing, should we not make sure there is fully alleviated penalties for repeat offenders, and if by then we've learned the training didn't take. So the dash two amendments do is provide an escalator, still allow for the first and I believe second conviction to be violations rather than misdemeanors, but then allow for the third to be a crime rather as it currently is. Doesn't escalate it beyond what it currently is, so I don't believe it has any fiscal with regard to that, but rather than having it ad infinitum being a violation forever, 27 offenses, it makes sure three strikes and at least it's a crime rather than a violation. I'm happy to answer questions, but I think that's all it does. Hopefully I didn't mess anything up.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. Right, I'm sorry.
I can't recall. Is there a knowingly standard here? Is this
yes.
third time you knowingly do it?
Yeah.
I believe there yes. is a knowingly standard. I don't see it in the amendments because I believe it's
in the basic
statute.
Okay, thank you.
The knowingly providing is an element of the violation and after second offense a crime.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you.
Representative Krieger. The interested parties that come up and testified about their difficulty when they sell, are they in line, understanding, and approving?
I must admit that they will have to speak for themselves. What I know is from who I've spoken to in the hallway, who's been working, they've done some great work on working on the amendments. They seem to be comfortable. In every indication I've received, which might be imperfect, is that we are roughly at consensus. And what I can speak with confidence to is what was said on the record, which was they didn't see too much risk with there being current crime levels for repeat offenders because they didn't think that was the problem. That the problem they were trying to solve was the person who was an employee that had probably with relatively high turnover rates, worked at their particular store for a year. During that year, oops, I sold to somebody who looked underage, you know, who looked underage 25 and I didn't think they did, or, you know, I forgot. Now I'm going to do a training, I won't get nailed in that same way. And I don't think they were attempting to go after the repeat offenders where there clearly might be a problem in that very rare case.
As I recall, Representative, they were trying to protect someone from getting fired for the first time mistake.
Yeah.
And then item that the amendments try to address is that you want to, the original bill didn't have any penalty for repeat, and they said, well, you don't have people that repeat. And then, so Representative Smith said, since we don't, let's go ahead and if you have the odd man out, we could then take action against them to keep things in line and not encourage people to be repeat. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Speaker, members of the committee.
I move dash twos. We can't move the bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move dash twos in the House Bill 3343.
Representative Wisnett moves the dash twos in the House Bill 3343. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Carry the bill over to April 24th. Open a work session on House Bill 2853 and carry that over to April 28th. Close the work session. No further business before the committee today. Meeting adjourned.